We're not quite at quorum yet, but we'll call the meeting to order and we'll move minutes as soon as we get a sufficient quorum. But we want to provide enough time for the discussion. An issue that's sort of floating to the top, and we want to inform ourselves about this morning. We have House File 868 in front of us. That is in our possession. The other two are not in our possession, and so we're calling them presentations and informational hearings. So, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I'm kind of looking here. It looks
and like everyone, you need to identify yourself for the record.
Representative Rick Hansen, South St. Paul. I'm looking forward here. I see Representative Davids is almost like a goalie here to be blocking anything we do. He's going to be guarding the net.
Nothing gets by
Representative Davids. And I'm here to present House File 868. 868 was introduced last year, and there was a bill the previous session as well responding to the issue of air quality in ice arenas. Minnesota had instituted the Mighty Ducks program to help build ice arenas probably a generation ago now. And as time goes by, there's things that we learn and things that age, and air quality has become an issue. We've had extensive discussion about this at the legislature over the years. And it seems like every few years there's an incident, at least one incident. I think the latest one that I remember was in Duluth, I believe in November of 12 or December of 12, where kids were sent to the hospital with ice. And it's an issue of carbon monoxide settling in the ice arena. So relating to when you have an internal combustion engine that's working as a edger or on a Zamboni, that emissions can stay in the arena. And when you have small kids or anyone else who's exerting themselves on the ice, that carbon monoxide can impact their health. And so what my bill does is it appropriates $5 million to go to the Amateur Sports Commission for improving and replacing some of those HVAC systems to be available for air quality monitoring. It also has a provision in it. There's a replacement that needs to be done with Freon as Freon gets phased out over time, and that's in a very expensive cost. So I put both of those needs into this bill, but I think if you would ask me what the priority is that health and safety factor and the HVAC systems that are in the bill. I have with me today Jason Dwelly from the Wakota Arena in South St. Paul, who's going to talk from his experience just on the issue to give you a little bit of the flavor, what reality is in the arena.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Jason Dwelly, Wakota Arena, South St. Paul, Minnesota. Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Representative Hansen stated, the indoor air quality has been, it took kind of to the forefront over the last couple of years, in particularly when the Department of Health revised their rules to make the air quality requirements more stringent in the state. So we have more reporting duties now, we have lower levels now, we have more training things now that we have to report. So that being said, the Department of Health requires us to be able to maintain indoor air quality. They don't say how, they don't care how, they just want us to maintain indoor air quality. Well, by and large, most of the rinks in Minnesota are going to maintain their indoor air quality by their HVAC system, which, you know, brings in fresh air, removes exhaust air, and there are some rinks that may struggle with these new rules that the Department of Health has put in place. So this would go a long way towards helping a lot of those rinks be able to comply with the Department of Health's rules and regulations. Will this fix everyone's problem 100%? I don't think so. I don't think it will, but it's a very good start, and we're going to be able to get the worst ones done first that are in the most need and that may have the most serious problems. This will go a long way to solving those issues, on maintaining the indoor air quality. From our own facility needs standpoint, after this season, I guess I won't have any need for any of this money. We did take a step to convert to all electric resurfacing and edging. So by rule, the testing is no longer required once you are 100% electric on resurfacing and edging. So we Wacota Arena individually won't need to participate in any of the Mighty Ducks grants that are available, but there are a lot of rinks that will need to because they can't afford to do it on their own. The costs associated with the upgrades in your air handling, they could vary widely from rink to rink. You could just need a couple $1,000 booster fan to get your HVAC up to where it can handle the air in your building. We just need a few more cubic feet per minute in our air handling system, and that could be a pretty relatively small cost. And then there are other facilities where they could need everything that's associated with bringing in fresh air, exhausting the air that's in the building, and treating the incoming air. So that could be anywhere up to a couple hundred to $300,000, $400,000. It depends on the size of the facility and what the individual needs are. So to pinpoint it down to an exact dollar amount would be difficult because each facility is unique and they all have their own needs based on the physical nature of their building.
Questions? Madam. Oh, Representative Ward, I'm sorry.
All right, Madam Chair, thank you. I've got a couple questions. Representative Hansen or Mr. Dwelly, do you know at all the status of the Mighty Ducks program in itself? Is it that alive and well? Do we know where that is?
Madam Chair and
Representative Hansen, and then you will note immediately following their presentation of their local situation, we are going to have Mr. Erickson sort of give us past history, and you have a handout from Mr. Erickson in the packet too. So,
okay,
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Ward, the statute has been there for a while, but the appropriations have not.
That's what I thought. So, Madam Chair, this committee visited, when we were in Duluth. I'm very familiar with the Proctor delegation has a bonding proposal in for a new ice arena. One of their reasons is for this issue alone. There's others, but this is an issue down at my own hometown, Brainerd area. Our arena down there had HVAC concerns. We think we've got it taken care of. But Mr. Dwelly, matter of fact, my own son, who is a pretty good hockey player, was impacted with asthma. A kid with asthma, and some of the discharges that come from the Zamboni or the Freon really impact those asthmatic kids. But aren't we talking about kind of two different issues? The Zamboni, number one, and that emission, and then the Freon. And the Freon's going to be illegal starting when?
Mr. Dwelly?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, they are separate. One does not impact the other. The R22 Freon phase out is 2020 is kind of the date that's been out there. Is the date where importation of the R22 will no longer be allowed, and it will still be available as reclaimed and recycled, but you will no longer be able to purchase virgin unused Freon.
So, Madam Chair, thank you. So the new arenas that are going up are no longer using R22 Freon, is my guess. Do we have any idea at all about the significant, or I think what's going to be the significant cost to the state in the state of Minnesota on this issue? How many arenas are going to be impacted? $5 million is, as you said, a nice start, but as you indicated, Mr. Dwelly, that it could be a couple thousand, but it could go a lot more for to clear up the problem. So do we have any indication at all of the size or scope of this problem statewide?
Mr. Dwelly.
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, I believe there are probably 100 or so affected arenas that still use R22. And again, after this year, we will not be using R22. Wakota Arena, City of South St. Paul just passed a bond referendum, so we had in our referendum the replacement of our refrigeration system, and we are changing to an alternative refrigerant. So I have a bit of a perspective on cost. You can get it. You could probably change refrigerants for as little as a couple hundred thousand with a replacement refrigerant. Not as efficient as ammonia energy wise. Not as efficient heat transfer wise. And you can do that with very little adjustment to your system that needs to be done. Or you can do what we're doing and go ammonia. And we're an indirect system right now, which means we only have Freon in our back room. We don't have any Freon in the floor. There are a few. I think there's probably 40 some in the state still that have direct expansion system, which means that there's actually Freon running through their floor, mm-hmm. Whereas the vast majority do not. Our cost is estimated in the $600,000 to $750,000 range. Just to replace the refrigeration room, not to do the floors. That's just the room. If you're looking at also replacing your floors, you're probably in the per sheet, you're in the $1.6 to $1.8 million range if you have to replace your floors as well per sheet. So, I mean, it's a significant cost. It is.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just leave it right now.
Representative Carlson and Representative Erdahl, are your questions specifically to the Wakota Arena, or should we maybe transition to Mr. Erickson?
When I look at it, Madam Chair, I think I'll wait for Mr. Erickson.
Okay, how about Representative Erdahl?
I think I'll ask.
Right now? Okay, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there's a big range here in possible cost. We could be doing a bill for $100 million. Would you to take care of everything that may not even do it?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, that's why, Mr. Dwelly had mentioned, do the worst first. If we're talking health and safety, there is a huge need both in the HVAC issue but also the Freon issue. I think the Freon issue is a replacement changeover that, is 2020. We have some rinks now that need to be upgraded with air quality, and it could be a low cost. That's why it's a grant program from the Amateur Sports Commission, so that people would apply. You could see the quality of those requests for proposals, and you may have one that is $5,000. You may have one that's greater than that, but that's something where we think we can get that out and have the Sports Commission make the best decisions that are there. $5 million is a drop in the bucket in terms of the entire issue, but we need to start dealing with some of the immediate concerns that are there. And I'll just follow up. 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, I voted sticker on. We had a referendum where we voted to raise our taxes to take care of this in South St. Paul. So, not everybody has that capacity or the willingness to do that. And if it's a small amount, relatively small amount, but a difficult thing, I think the grant program can help follow up on the state commitment that was made when some of these arenas were built.
I'm sure.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Nelson Hansen, Scandinavian, I get mixed up. Appreciate your comments on that. I mean, Litchfield, that I represent, has an arena that I know is in dire need of making some repairs. It was built in 1970. But just a question, how much is a electric Zamboni cost?
Now that might be, I don't know if we're going to transition to Mr. Erickson, so I don't know if you've got questions specific to the Wakota Arena, but just you might think about that when you ask your questions. Mr. Dwelly.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, we actually, because we are switching over to all electric, I've again, I have pretty close knowledge of. You're looking at around about $125,000 for a battery-operated Zamboni. And there are other makes and models that are available as well. It's just, you know, the ICE resurfacer is the generic term. So you're looking at between $125,000 and probably $145,000 for an electric ICE resurfacer.
Madam Chair,
severed all.
How much the older type, the gasoline or diesel, whatever they were, how much were they?
Mr. Dwelly.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, there, the range varies depending on your options, but you're probably looking at somewhere between $85,000 and $95,000.
All right, thank you.
Representative Mahoney, is yours to this gentleman? Otherwise, we have Mr. Erickson coming. If you've got a broader general question, statewide.
It's a question about the grants.
In the bill.
So yes, in the bill.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hansen, is there going to? I have a couple of questions. Is there going to be a match required for these grants from the municipalities that are trying to renovate? And is there a roadmap? No. Is there some accountability on how they would actually make the grant? So that if Litchfield or St. Paul or XYZ small town puts a grant in, they can kind of see, okay, we have a population of 2,000 or 10,000, we have tax capacity of this versus this. Accountability, that's, you know.
And I'm going to suggest that's the very thing we asked Representative Mr. Erickson to
address. That's fine, that question is going to be answered later.
I think we're going to transition because I think all of our questions are of a general nature, and so we're going to ask Mr. Erickson to come down. And
thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and if anybody else would like to co-author the bill, I'd be happy to get co-authors. And I'm Representative Mahoney, happy the bill doesn't have a match in there now or reporting. I think those are two components that are worthwhile.
And Representative Hansen brought this issue to us last year. In last year's bill, we had $1.5 million in cash, because I think some of the questions that you're asking around the table are the emerging issues, and cash is more flexible. And so that was already in last year's bill. And he's reminding us of that, and so that's why we asked Mr. Erickson to come as well and give us a little bit of statewide context. While he's coming forward, I think we need to make sure we're not sending false signals, Mr. Erickson. You have established your priorities for this year, and I think you might want to remind us of them, because some of them have been in the queue for some time. What we have before us today is some emerging issues, but just remind us that you you have established your priorities for your agency.
Absolutely. Thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Erickson, Executive Director of Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and I have one of my greatest all-time board members, Joel Carlson, who we play hockey Sunday night with the legislative group. I was looking for Representative Phyllis Kahn here.
Leon's here.
And also Representative Lilly, which I took a big fall last Sunday. I'm saddened to report, and my cardiologist is not too happy with me. But anyway, I think we can cover all those questions that came up. I think the best place to start is all of you should have a handout on Mighty Ducks. I think if we explain how that program worked, it'll put into context the bill by Representative Hansen. So if you refer to this on the front page, we got the important facts. If you remember, in the year around 1994-95, girls and women were just picking up on hockey. The sport was getting momentum, but there was a huge problem. Our arenas were already full. And Representative Phyllis Kahn passed a bill, became law, that required all ice arena managers to provide equal time to girls and women, unless the arena could prove that they already were at 50-50. Well, no arena was there. So all these emerging female programs got ice, and they were displacing traditional programs. So the legislature under, there's a number of people around the room, like Representative Carlson, who authored the original Mighty Ducks Association, Representative Bob Milbert of South St. Paul, Representative Phyllis Kahn, and others. Anyway, so over a three-year period, the legislature invested $18 million. And one thing the legislature gave us clear direction, they did not want the state to build arenas for communities. They recognize that's primarily a city, county, school district responsibility. So I think through the expertise of the legislators and our board, we said, what's the minimum amount of state dollars that would be necessary to leverage the result that the state wanted, and that is to build more arenas so that would provide opportunities. And the number they came up at that time was $250,000. Now, for reference, it cost $2.5 million, $3 million, $3.5 million to build an arena. So when people came up to me and said, well, you know, like, boy, the state built all these arenas, the state was less than 10% of those 61 new arenas were built. To give you a little perspective, those 61 new arenas came on top of Minnesota's 220 arenas, something like that. Those 61 arenas are more arenas that exist in the entire state of Wisconsin. So we increased capacity, built more arenas than existed in the state of Wisconsin. Now, one other problem that came up, people said, well, we've had an older arena, and the locker rooms aren't really suitable for girls and women. So the board and legislature authorized the renovation aspect, and you could get up to $50,000 for an existing arena to improve your locker rooms, make the arena much more usable for female users. Now, here's a fun fact. In the year 1996, there were around 2,000 girls and women registered to play hockey. Today, or as of 2013, there are 16,593 girls and women registered playing hockey in Minnesota. And at the end of your packet, you'll see how we rank nationally. Minnesota is the number one state in America with the most female registrations, 3,000 more than Massachusetts. And, of course, Massachusetts is a much bigger state population-wise. And when you consider Minnesota is, 26th, 27th nationally in population, to lead the nation in this, we have a remarkable record. And I think the legislature deserves credit. Finally, the final general point I'll make before I walk you through this report, legislature is always concerned about making a bonding bill create jobs. And when we surveyed all the applicants, that $18 million leveraged over $123 million of construction in Minnesota, because the $250,000 we gave a community like Plymouth, they built two sheets, we gave them $350,000, leveraged millions of dollars on top of it. So the state really got a great bang for their buck. And you facilitated the evolution of women's hockey, in the state and probably in the United States. And Joel, I don't know if you want to add anything to that, but Joel was a key part of that whole effort.
Mr. Carlson?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your record, or for your tape, Joel Carlson. I've been a volunteer member of the Amateur Sports Commission since 2003, and I served as our representative on the Department of Health Rural Reform Task Force for air quality in indoor sports facilities. And I learned a lot about air quality, not just from hockey arenas, but also monster trucks and all of the other things that go on in and enclosed buildings, and it was an educational affair. And happy to answer questions about that process and where we think some of the arenas are at and the need. We've spent a lot of time on this issue at the commission. In our last grant, Representative Mahoney, that the commission our last Mighty Duck grant, when you asked where the program was at, was in 2003 when I first came on to the commission. Was, I think, the last grant that we issued under Mighty Ducks, and I believe it was for Sauk Rapids, I believe. But the commission has an excellent track record of being a fiscal agent and grant-making agent. In fact, we're so good at it that we have been the agent for Hennepin County to review and recommend their grants for their youth sports program that they've adopted with the construction of the new Twin Stadium. So we are actively involved in the process right now, and should the legislature approve funds to the commission for air handling upgrades in arenas. We believe we have the capability of reviewing those applications, applying them to need, and act, you know, do what the legislature wants us to do with those funds. Some comments about the R22, which for us is an emerging issue. The commission has not spent time on that issue. We met on February 26th, and we agreed that we should get more actively involved in looking at what the need is. I happen to spend a lot of time at Wacota Arena every Friday at noon, although not this Friday. But we've seen what, you know, I've learned a lot from Jason and what the arenas are doing. They have an active arena manager association, and what we'd like to do on the R22, I believe, as a group, as a commission, is to really drill down on what that need is and what the, you know, are you just going to upgrade your arena? Can you really do the ammonia fix, or do you need to tear out the floor? We don't really have a handle on what that need is, and the, you know, this didn't just sneak up on us. It's the Montreal Protocol that banned R22 freon started in 1987. Mm-hmm. It's been it's been known since the middle 90s that the 2020 date was coming. Many communities have, like South St. Paul, have already invested to upgrade their refrigeration systems, and so we need to now find out more about that issue. But the air handling, we're pretty well equipped on what we need to do there. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you for hearing from us.
We do have a number of questions. Mr. Erickson, you have an additional comment before we go to questions.
I just wanted to say that I agree wholeheartedly with Representative Hansen when he said the priority need is the air quality and safety. Because, you know, there was several people that were hospitalized from bad air in arenas. The freon issue is the emerging issue and has the 2020 deadline. And so we would concur with his assessment that that's probably where the emphasis should be at this place and time. And I do want to just thank you for that underscore. Our agency first mission for you legislators is to create economic impact. And our agency, through our projects around the state, bring in $70 million of economic impact every year. Therefore, the priorities that we have are projects like the South West Regional Sports Center in Marshall. Representative Swinsky is number one. And number two is expansion of the National Sports Center, which has, you know, 4 million visitors a year. And we can produce another $10 million of annual economic impact. And then we have an asset preservation issue with some of the older facilities at Blaine. So that's our priorities, but we certainly welcome additional money invested in amateur sports like the vision that Representative Hansen has.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I, as the grandfather of a hockey player, and with 4 hockey players staying in my home this weekend for the tournament, I really perked up when Representative Hansen mentioned the problems that they had at the Duluth Arena. And my question of Mr. Erickson is, how have we handled those emergency situations? Has it just been up to the local units? Now, I've been at tournaments, for example, in Hermantown. I don't know if that's the rink that was referenced or not. There's the Proctor rink, and then there's some in Duluth. But I'm just interested, when you've had an emergency situation like that, how do we resolve it currently?
Mr. Erickson.
Okay, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson. As of today, there is no Mighty Ducks grant program, and ended a number of years ago, and there is no Mighty Ducks grant program for air quality. So we simply have been a participant in the hearing, studying the issue and giving our input. But Joel has, at his own time and energy, attended all of these Department of Health hearings and has met with our arena manager in Blaine and others. So, Joel, why don't you comment on that?
The Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, there have been, thankfully, a few episodes around the state where the air quality has gotten to the point of being a health concern. And one of the things that we learned through the Department of Health review and rule reform was that many of the incidences of improper air quality in arenas was driven by operator air, not so much facility or air handling failure, but from, you know, just mistakes that people make. At the arena in Duluth, I was kind of conferring with Jason, I don't think they had to make any HVAC improvements from that experience, but some different operational techniques. They really don't know if that particular incident was related to the air handling or to operator, mistakes. So in that one, they didn't, you know, really have to change anything. There was one where a Zamboni, many are propane, some are not, but there where they were actually working on the Zamboni and tuning it right next to the locker room, and I believe that was in Morris where that happened, and kids got sick. It was not a HVAC problem. It was an operational mistake that was the cause of that. And so many of the instances have not been driven by a failure of the air handling. It's been more of a situational concern. A lot of use, failure to properly ventilate with equipment that's already there.
Yeah, Madam Chair, that answers the question. I was aware there wasn't anything in the Mighty Ducks program currently. That's why I was asking the question. I was assuming that more had to be done, but Mr. Carlson pretty well covered what has been done to date. Thank you.
Representative Mahoney, we were transitioning when you were. Did you have an additional question that you wanted to get back to now? That
thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my only question is kind of an accountability, how these grants go. And Mrs. Hansen indicated that he's interested in working on that and any kind of matching. So the question would be, would this kind of a deal, this $5 million be looking at matching grants? And I think you mentioned that. But then the accountability, because one of the frustrating things, we switched over from direct appropriations to competitive grants in the Jobs Committee, and I've gotten a few phone calls, and there's a lot of questions about how it's done. So are you interested in putting together a pamphlet, a page, on how and what are the standards that you would have to meet to compete or win the grant? And that's kind of the question I'm going for.
And I think it is one of the questions we're looking at today. How are you fair to everyone? When you go down this road and you look at the whole state, is there a way to be fair?
Okay. What our board has done historically is that we look at the legislative requirements first, and they're built into an RFP. Then our agency, through additional analysis of the issue, will add information requirements like the number of users, are they using environmentally friendly techniques in their renovation of their building, and there's all these criteria and a point system. Then we publish the RFP in the state register, which all cities, counties, schools see, and then our staff evaluate those and put a point system, and then we bring it back to the board of the Amateur Sports Commission, which has 6 legislators and 11 gubernatorial appointees, and then they direct us on after they're ranked. The other thing the legislature has been very clear on, they did not want this to favor one part of the state to another. So if you look in the back of this pamphlet, we were directed by the legislature to award grants by congressional district to the extent possible. And so if you look at the distribution over those 4 years of the grants, we were pretty close at the number of grants, you know, around $2 million to each congressional district, so that if you lived in northwest Minnesota or southeast, you know, everybody had, they were almost more competing with the other facilities in their congressional district than they were statewide. And that ensured that if you look at the coverage of both, you'll see two maps, one of the state and one of the Twin Cities. I would venture to say that the majority of legislators around this table had districts that received either a Mighty Ducks new arena or renovation grant. And I think that was one of the successes of the program. So to answer your question is that We develop a professional criteria. They're technically ranked. And then the other thing which we did, and I think that I want to remind everyone of this, of these, you know, I don't know how many different individual grants, 150 grants, there is not one bad grant that came back to haunt our agency or the state. And I think that's a credit to the system that was developed both by the legislature and staff. And we also
competence, no doubt.
And we also, thank you, we also did only end grants. That the state, that if the community had a project of renovation of a new arena, we only awarded the grant after they showed us proof of occupancy, meaning the building was completed. We all know horror stories of projects that are half done, and there's public money, and the public doesn't get the benefit. The other thing that we did, I don't know if all agencies do, but we required that if you received a renovation grant or a new arena grant, your city was obligated to operate that facility for its intended purpose for the normal life of the facility, which was 25 years. There's been a couple communities that have called and says, you know, could we convert that to something else? Not many. But, and so I'm really proud to tell all of you that all of these arenas are still operating and they're still providing good services to kids and families.
Representative Mahoney.
So when you do the grant, are all, when you did the grant,
yeah,
were all grant applicators able to view that system of ranking, and so that if they didn't get it, they could go in and take a look and say, oh, we didn't put down the fact that we were willing to operate it for 25 years, whereas everybody else did. That's probably why we didn't get the grant. What I'm trying to do is cut down on phone calls that we might get as to why we didn't get the grant.
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, the ranking sheets, the technical rankings, were available to board members, but I do not think we ever made that. We didn't put it on a website or made it available to the general public. If a community called us and asked us why they didn't get it, we shared that data with them.
Then they're available.
Yeah, and it's available. But yeah.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Carl.
Just for to amplify that point, just if you look on page 2 of Representative Hansen's bill, that lays out statutorily a number of the requirements that we are obligated to follow. So we do have statutory guidelines that we have to follow in making the grants as well.
Representative Detmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. How many arenas are there in the state of Minnesota? And then who owns them? I know, I'm sure cities, there's cities that own them, school districts, private, or hockey associations. You know, who's the ownership of these arenas?
I'll answer part of it, and then I'll turn it over to Joel. In my experience, and we have probably like 200 applications in our file still from this program, that 97% of all ice arenas in Minnesota are owned and operated by cities. Then there's a few counties like Ramsey County and a few school districts like Centennial School District. And I believe there's one or two private rinks. I think Breezy Point has an ice arena that they use part of their resort operation. And that's, and unless you consider there's Minnehaha Academy, I think has a rank of private school, but it's a high school. Joel,
I think two or three rinks that are also owned by amateur youth hockey associations, but that's rare. There are a little over 200 arenas in Minnesota that includes those on college campuses, which are not eligible for any of the funding through this, and cities are the largest owners and operators of these facilities.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the most part, for cities, is this a money making issue that they own these, or school districts don't own them because it's not? I know my local school district, Forest Lake, the hockey association owned the arena. In fact, and now the school district just purchased it for about $3.4 million. And so that's a rare situation. Are you calling that?
Badness Heights might have a different kind of answer for that question. In
I don't know if we have enough time to talk about
Badness Heights. No, we don't have enough time to talk about that one.
who's taking that one?
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, single-seat arenas are fortunate if their income can cover their operating expenses. So if any community is contemplating building a single sheet, they need to raise, you know, the all of the capital dollars, pay for it, and then turn the keys over to their manager, and with a little luck, they break even. Two-sheet ice arenas can make, you know, $100,000, $150,000 of net revenue that they can apply to a mortgage or improvements, and then, you know, three and four sheets, you know, can handle more debt. But I think one of the more efficient models is the two-sheet arena, because you do get a little extra revenue to do your repairs and capital improvements. But it's not a, there, just so you know one thing, too. On the East and West Coast, most of the rinks are run by private operators, but the hourly ice rate is between $300 and $400 an hour. In Minnesota, the range of hourly rate is between $140 and $200. I think in Minnesota and the Midwest, ice arenas are considered a public park or benefit, where in the East and West Coast, they're considered private recreation services that people pay top dollar to participate in.
Representative
Well, thank you. Just a final, Madam Chair, just a final comment. You know, I, as a wrestling coach, I just like that nice, warm wrestling room. So,
yeah. Representative McNamer.
Smells are different. Yeah. Madam Chair, Mr. Carlson, Mr. Erickson, this is kind of a personal question. What's going to happen to the old Zambonis?
Mr. Carlson.
Demolition derby.
The
demolition on ice.
you know, that's a good question, Representative McNamer. Nobody's really posed that to me. I'm going to have to do a little research on that one. I personally think that they're the ones that are very serviceable are going to find an opportunity for repurposing for outdoor arenas. And outdoor skating is becoming much more popular. Partly refrigerated outdoor arenas like one that we operate in Roseville and several in St. Paul are becoming very popular as a community amenity, and so I think that there's going to be a use. And if you can use a Zamboni on an outdoor arena, that's for a hockey player, that's nirvana, right? I mean, it's great. And, you know, to Representative Detmer's point, I mean, you know, these are community assets, and whether it's, you know, the big Pee Wee tournament that comes into your town or your community. Minnesota has also, on pro bono, I represent Minnesota hockey. We have the largest youth hockey organization in the country. We have over 65,000 households participating in hockey. We do over 14,000 screenings at Minnesota Hockey of background checks for volunteers, coaches, team managers. It is an unbelievable part of the fabric of Minnesota's quality of life, and I think that's how communities view their arenas, and they cherish them.
Madam Chair, to this point?
Anything further, Representative Neimer?
Minnesota
versus...
No. To this point, as he spoke about an outdoor refrigerated rink, I live within earshot of a hockey puck at that outdoor rink, and at 15 below. So it does tell you something about hockey players. At 10 o'clock at night, they were playing hockey on that refrigerated rink.
Representative Ward.
Thank you for the second opportunity, Madam Chair. And this is to the outdoor rink. I'm glad you talked about that, Mr. Carlson, and Representative Mahoney. Mr. Erickson, have you looked at, you know, the NHL now as some of their bigger games are outdoors? I mean, you know, we all, those of us that love the sport of hockey and wrestling, but particularly hockey, love to watch the NHL outdoor games, you know, in the venues that they're in. And they are becoming a lot more popular. It reminds us of our days of growing up when we had to play outside. And as a former coach, one of the things that I did is I required my team to practice outdoors once a week and have at least once a week game outdoors. But so what is the comparison of an outdoor artificial ice rink versus an indoor sheltered rink? Can you build a lot more outdoor artificial rinks than and you know, cost wise, environmental wise, have a benefit versus the indoor sheltered artificial rinks? Have you ever looked at that?
Mr.
Erickson. Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Ward, we looked at that in the original Mighty Ducks program. If you look at the law back then, and Herb Brooks championed this idea, he was on our board and on the task force, and he wanted to make sure, and there were different legislators who agreed with him, that a community could apply for a new arena grant of $250,000, and they could build either an indoor arena, which costs, you know, around $3 million, or they could build an outdoor refrigerator, and at that time you could probably get it done for $500,000. So there was a real incentive all across the state. If a community said, no, we'd rather go outdoors, because you get almost half of it paid for by the state. But I just want to say one thing, though. I think that idea of building outdoor refrigerant rinks is a little more nostalgic than reality. No community in that four-year period ever applied for a new RETA grant to build an outdoor refrigerated rink. They all wanted the four walls, the seating. And one of the reasons is, look at this winter. If you had a squirt playing hockey, like, you know, Rubs and Carls and grad kids, how many days would they have missed through below zero conditions? And you know, we have years, too, where it rains every 3 weeks. And so most communities, when it came to putting their money where their mouth was, said, we want the stability of the guaranteed ice in an indoor building. So
I think we, did we have any more questions? I think we're going to then transition. We've invited two communities here to give us a sense of their situation.
Madam Chair,
I think they're we may, I don't know if you're sticking around to hear the other two presentations, but
at your request, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to. I just want to compliment City of Plymouth was a recipient of Mighty Ducks grants, and they built two new sheets. They now have three, and I visited the facility last week. And I'd say next to the Schwann Super Rink in Blaine, it's probably the finest ice rink facility in the state. The quality that the community put it into that rink is really impressive. And so I'm anxious to hear what they have to say. But it was it's a very good example of doing a great job.
And members, we also, in your packets is the Mighty Ducks. We had, it was fashioned after the other, but we thought it would be helpful for you to see the Mighty Kicks.
Yeah.
Mighty Ducks and Mighty Kicks are the two programs we've had. And so Representative Benson and Representative Carlson are bringing House File 2033. It's not in our possession. It's, I don't know which committee it was referred to. But we'll invite them forward first. There's Representative Benson.
Good morning, Madam
and
Chair.
And we've got
and
several
members.
Chairs up there, if you can. And I think
Madam Chair, Representative Benson and I talked this morning, and he will present it on behalf of both of us.
All right.
And Representative Carlson will fill in for all my errors, mistakes, and misquotes.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members for hearing House File 2033. Plymouth Mayor Slavik here will be presenting the details of our proposal, and City Manager Dave Callister will answer any technical questions or other questions that may come up. And I'm just going to make a couple of brief item points, but they'll be reinforced, I suspect, by Mayor Slavik. And the reason I'm interested in that is because in the past there's been some confusion about the ownership of these rinks. They're owned by the City of Plymouth, and the reason for the confusion is that next door there is a Lifetime Fitness facility, and a number of people at the Hennepin County Commissioner's level were confused about that, and Representative Carlson might want to discuss, if it's necessary, clarification as well on that. So that's number one. That means that the proposal you know, meets muster concerning that particular issue. I also want to note that the appropriation request is and would be matched by 50% plus support from the city of Plymouth. So, as Madam Chair knows, I have a proposal also for bonding for the St. David's School, and both of these proposals meet a requirement that I always try to have, which is that entities who are seeking state support ought to have some skin in the game. They ought to be able to participate in the process. So this proposal meets that qualification as well. The third thing, and I think many of you have copies of this excellent brochure, which the folks brought along. If you look at the back page, you'll notice the numbers which describe the commitment that is being made by the city of Plymouth and then the state request. And of course, as you read House File 2033, you see that none of these appropriations would be released until the Commissioner of Management Budget determines that the city has met its part of the obligation here. If you look on the inside cover, and without stealing all the comments from our good mayor, you'll notice on the third page there is a map of the state of Minnesota, and it indicates that 50 or teams from 50 of the 87 counties in the state of Minnesota make use of this facility, including teams from North Dakota, South Dakota, Iowa, and even our good friends across the border in Canada. So also I want you to be aware that we have Senate authors, companion authors for this, Senator Latz, Senator Bonhoff, and Senator Rest are co-authors in the Senate. So with that brief introduction, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to the Mayor of Plymouth.
And is the Mayor speaking first?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the
Thank you. Kelly Slavik. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. Kelly Slavik, Mayor of Plymouth, and I am a hockey mom and, unfortunately, a hockey wife as well. So I've been to many, many arenas throughout my lifetime. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to be here today. This is the City of Plymouth's first ever bonding request. We're requesting $2.1 million for in a capital appropriation to make needed renovations to the state's what we've found out through this process is it's the second busiest facility in the state of Minnesota. We have, I'll tell you a little bit about our facility. It's 120,000 square feet, and it was built in 1997. We have three sheets of ice. We added our third sheet in 2004. We have seating for 1,700 visitors. We have meeting rooms, locker rooms, and concession space. We have rinks for hockey, figure skating, speed skating, and open skating. We have a fiscally sound operation model. We don't take any support from the City of Plymouth, so we're really self-sustaining. We generate revenue for the smaller capital items, but we need some outside funding for the major capital improvements every 15 to 20 years. And I think Representative Benson referred to some confusion as to whether this was a public building or not. And I can tell you, I think the confusion was created because we're looking at building a dry land facility, training facility onto the arena. It will still be publicly owned. The entire building is publicly owned. But we have plans that have not been approved by the City Council to lease the space to a private company. And that is not part of this request at all. And I can, if you have any specific questions related to that, I can answer that. But that's not a part of this request at all. This company would pay to be there in that space if it's approved by the council. So we really view Plymouth as a regional center. And I'll tell you why you're thinking, why should we bond for this community rink? But we're the seventh largest city in the state of Minnesota. Our population is about 73,000. We have over 46,000 jobs in our community. So in terms of jobs and population, Plymouth is on par with Rochester, Mankato, Duluth, and St. Cloud, which have received funds for their arenas. The City of Plymouth funds facilities that people from across the region and the state use, and as you can see, that was referenced in the handout. I think I helped pull together the number of counties that used our facility, and I was very conservative to make sure that I could prove that every team that's played at the facility was throughout the state. So I think, you know, we've had teams from Iowa and Arizona even there that I didn't include. But really we see our arena as a statewide asset. It's one of the busiest arenas in Minnesota. Annually we have about 500,000 visitors from outside the city come to our arena. We've had and when they come, they stay in our hotels and use our restaurants and are in the city and in the region, and they definitely have a significant positive impact on our community and the surrounding area. We have over 20 local, regional, and statewide tournaments that serve over 400 teams. We're the home ice for the Wayzata boys and girls hockey teams, as well high school teams, as well as Providence Academy, and our ICE is home to one of the nation's top two largest youth hockey associations in the country, serving more than 1,000 kids between the ages of 6 and 18. So Plymouth, as I think Mr. Erickson referenced, Plymouth did receive $350,000 in state grant money to build our arena, but we leveraged $5 million in city tax dollars and over $500,000 from a hockey organization to contribute to that as well. So I think we made very good use of that grant money from the state. And with that grant money, we were able to accommodate girls' hockey programs as they geared up in Minnesota. I think we have a very successful venue for female skaters. Our Wayzata Youth Hockey Association has a total of 1,030 skaters this year, and about 24% of those are female. Wayzata High School has approximately 80 skaters, with 50% being female, and a total of 285 females use our ice and sit in at the arena. So we're requesting $2.1 million in bonds for pre-design, design, construction, furnishing, and equipping a renovation project at our building, which is 17 years old. Our building needs basic upgrades to ensure that it's maintained and to keep up with the public demands for service. The request will cover basic infrastructure at the arena, and I think at the back of your handout, we specify how those funds will be used. The total project cost for the improvements is $4.2 million, so the city plans to match dollar for dollar and a little more with our own city tax dollars to pay for those improvements. So briefly, I'll just go through some. The ice rink conversion is really resizing. We have an Olympic-sized rink that nobody wants to really play on. I think when we built our arena, the trend was to have an Olympic-sized rink, and when you've got 4- and 5-year-olds and even my 16-year-old trying to play and compete on an Olympic-sized rink when they're used to the standard-sized NHL-sized rink, it's a little difficult, and it's you know, not something that kids want to play on or adults want to play on either. So we want to convert that to a professional size rink, and when we do that, I think it'll be right size for youth events, and it'll create more dry floor space training to hold other off-season activities such as expos and community events. But I think the biggest point I want to make there is, because it will be a smaller sheet, we'll see a 28% electric savings for that sheet of ice. So I think from an environmental standpoint, it's in the cost savings, it would definitely be a benefit there. The roof is about 17 years old now, and we've had a positive cash flow at our arena, but we still need additional funds for these larger capital repairs that we don't have a funding source for. Parking lot replacement, as with the roof, the city has been able to fund many of the repairs. But the parking lot is a substantial investment that, again, we need some outside capital assistance with. So all of the items that we're asking for bond money for will have a life of 20 years or longer, so it's really a capital investment in the truest sense. Plymouth has really proven itself to be a good steward of tax dollars. I mentioned the $350,000 investment that we received from the state in 1996 that we really turned into a regional amenity and a state asset. The city of Plymouth has committed more than $14 million in local funding to build and expand our arena. So Plymouth has really made a commitment to this entire region by developing and maintaining a quality arena utilized by skaters from throughout the state and beyond. And our Plymouth taxpayers have really stepped up. We asked local taxpayers to fund the arena in 1996, and they did so by approving a referendum. Over the years, Plymouth has really delivered on this taxpayer investment by developing and maintaining one of the state's premier and most well-used ice skating venues. So additionally, we've also expanded the arena, adding a third sheet of ice by partnering with local school and using city funds to do so. We've really been, I feel that the city has been a very responsible partner. We've carefully balanced our revenue and expenditures, and we've been very conservative doing so. We generated enough revenue to cover the operational costs and some smaller capital items, but we really need some state dollars to fund the items that will have a useful life of 20 years or more. So I understand the concern about the overall size of the bonding bill, but we ask that state lawmakers give our relatively modest request the same consideration given to other regional centers and facilities in the state. And we ask the state to recognize that commitment by granting $2.1 million to address the renovation and repairs at our ICE Center.
For your list.
And does Mr. Callister have additional testimony?
Madam Chair, if there are questions, I would be happy to answer them.
We have a question. This the difference of the size between Olympic and professional.
Madam Chair, I believe the difference is in the width of the arena being about 15 feet narrower. Okay. 15 feet narrower, so again, less space to cool and energy improvements are realized by shrinking that up, and it would also become more usable and more rentable because of what the mayor indicated.
We have no questions, so you must have been very thorough in your presentation.
Good.
Any concluding comments, Representative Benson or Representative Carlson?
No, Madam Chair, but again, just to reemphasize, this is, I think, a good example of a community requesting resources from the state and being willing to stand up and match them. And I think their history of stewardship of these ice rinks indicate that we have good players here and a city that will carry through on its commitments. And that's very important to me. And because of its regional significance, I felt this was a proposal that was worthy of your time and the committee's time and the resources from the state. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. And we have our last presentation, and we were trying to give you sort of a sense of broad needs and different stories. And so Dassel Quicado is here. And
is that like a big ball of time
this there? Is, of course, and Representative Erdahl, I don't know if you want to join them up there or whatever you'd like to do.
Yeah,
you can stay right where you are. And we'll see who kicks us off here. I have... just one name here, so we'll see.
They're a big ball.
And members, you do have a handout from this community.
That's what's their team's name?
Representative Erdahl, do you want to kick it off?
And sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. this is representatives of the Dassel Quicado Hockey Association. They are teamed with Litchfield for a hockey program, Litchfield Dassel Quicado, which in the boys' team in 1996 played in the state tournament. My son got the winning goal in the first overtime game, but that's another story. And they also, yes, just this last year, this season, the Litchfield Dassel Quicado Litchfield girls played as well in the state tournament. And The program, it's about 20 years ago, I think, that they came together. And the rink is in Litchfield, and there's been a decline in youth participation, particularly in the Dassel Quicado area, because of the travel to the Litchfield rink and the inconvenience. And so for about the last 10 years, Dassel Quicado has been attempting to build a rink of their own, which would service their youth hockey program at the Dassel Quicado school, or right adjacent to it. And these guys have worked extremely hard over the last decade trying to put this together. They've raised, I believe, $1 million to do the first stage. So they have the building up. They just don't have the ice. So the interior of the building is not finished, and they don't have the ice plant yet. But I just want to emphasize the need. They do service several counties in terms of participation in their program, and I would like to see a Mighty Ducks program expanded. As you look in the maps that have been provided, this does impact a lot of the state of Minnesota, a lot of our smaller communities, particularly in greater Minnesota, and I think this would be a worthy request. With
and
that, I'll...
You're also, you've also received a copy of a letter from Steve Dill, retired senator, and I thought it was just to this point, and as I'm reading it, it says, subject funding for paving the Loose Line Trail and funding to complete construction of the Dassel-Cocato. And he points out that he authored those bills when he was here. He was successful in the Senate, but not in the House. So he's challenging us, I think, by taking a look. So he's speaking on behalf of two bonding requests. So we have Clark Moe and Keith Reisen on. I'm not sure if I've pronounced that correctly, but if you correct me, I'll appreciate that. And who's going to speak first?
I will.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I'm Keith Reisenen, chairman of the Dassel-Cocato Regional Ice Center. And Madam Chair and committee members, it's a pleasure to be here. If, as you look through the materials in your packet and as I describe what we've done, I think you'll agree we're a very unique situation in the state of Minnesota. We started this venture 14 years ago. I don't think any of us would have dreamed it would take that long, but trying to build this arena with passionate dollars, and we to date have raised roughly $1.3 million with local donations, and we're basically building it as we get funds. The copy of the PowerPoint, we were going to actually project it, but this computer went to sleep here, so I'll just make references to the PowerPoint. But way back in 1998, through some local surveys, it was quite clear there was a need, a perception in our community there was a need for a multi-purpose facility that could be used as an ice arena in the winter and as a community facility in the off-season. We did have a strong local outdoor program, but when the outdoor programs were terminated, as Representative Erdahl said, we merged with the Litchfield youth hockey program. So we have the LDC youth hockey. Roughly 25 plus years ago, our high school programs merged. In fact, my younger brother was on the first merged team, and that's been a great relationship. And then, as you've seen in the Mighty Ducks discussion and others, it was very clear as our girls program started blossoming, the shortage of ice time. Our junior varsity is traveling to Litchfield. Those boys from Dassel-Cocato are driving at 5 o'clock in the morning to go for a JV practice, and the youth hockey sometimes gets back to Cocato 11 o'clock at night. We see this second sheet for our combined program as helping to continue to grow the girls program. We're very proud they made it to state this year. We also look at it as a way to rebuild the local numbers in Dassel-Cocato, and the combined Litchfield-Dassel-Cocato program would still exist. They would merge at whatever point the local numbers don't support a standalone program. So Litchfield-Dassel-Cocato, but with focus on building local numbers and the girls hockey program. We have actually been to the legislature two times. Back in 2002, we were, I think, one of the, we heard we were number two. Sartell was awarded the last Mighty Ducks grant, and we heard that we had a great proposal, but we didn't win. And then in 2009, 2010, Madam Chair, as you referred to Senator Dill's letter there, Senator Dill authored a bill in support of our program. The Senate bonding tour visited our site out in Dassel-Cocato. Just a brief overview of the project history. This is truly grassroots, as I've mentioned. We have had strong support at all levels. Our initial applications for the Mighty Ducks money was with the city of Dassel, and the second attempt was with the city of Cokato, so both cities have continued to support us. The townships, Dassel Cokato School allowed us to build on the campus of the high school, which was absolutely the dream spot for us. We formed a 501c3 in October of 99. We have now constructed the shell of this arena on the campus that was completed a couple of years ago at a cost of about $1 million. We are currently doing interior construction on what we call phase two. The budget for phase two is $340,000, and we are about $75,000 away from completing that, and we have confidence that will be completed by Q4. And if we do not receive funding for refrigeration, we will start the program with natural ice indoors, which some outstate arenas have done over the years. We also have a significant amount of in-kind commitments, over $150,000, local contractors and landscapers and so forth. We are, our best estimate is about $970,000 short of completing the project. Phase three is primarily refrigeration. If you look at this photo in your packet, you can see where the facility is. It's on the north side of our high school, right next to our new Performing Arts Center, which we're very proud of, just to the upper left of our arena there, and then that's U.S. Highway 12 in the background. So very accessible, very visible, and a great location for our combined community. As I mentioned earlier, we did have a very active outdoor sanctioned program. And then in the early 90s, when that was closed down, we merged with Litchfield. That's been a great marriage, but we do have seen numbers on the eastern side of the district go down due to a one-hour practice being a three-hour commitment to get to Litchfield and changed and practice and back home. And perhaps most of all, what has been pushing this need for the second sheet of ice for our combined program is the blossoming girls program, both at the high school level and at the youth hockey level. And we will be having more than 50% of the ice time in the DC sheet with girls programming. In fact, our girls varsity coach has already been eyeballing on the floor plans where the girls varsity locker room will be. So summary of the dollars that I made reference to. Phase one, construct the shell, $1 million roughly, completed and paid for a couple of years ago. Phase two is interior construction with locker rooms, rink basher boards, fire protection, Zamboni. We are assuming we'll start with a propane Zamboni, which we already own for our outdoor program. But with good air handling, are comfortable, we can maintain the air quality standards. We did look at getting some used refrigeration equipment, but with the R22 situation being phased out 6 years from now, we decided that we really need to go with the latest technology, and that's what we're planning to do. We plan to get our certificate of occupancy in the fourth quarter of this year from Wright County and start to use it at the end of this year, again, on natural ice if we don't have refrigeration. The cost for refrigeration for our facility there with the accompanying HVAC system is approximately $584,000. And the total funds to complete the project, $970,000. If I could just point out a little bit about the regional significance, I put a map in the packet, which I think Jenny copied to put in your packets. If you look at that, each red dot indicates where there's an existing ice arena, and the green check is where we're building, which is in what I would call a gap area. We have heard from people in all four directions from different communities. They would plan to have their kids, young kids, youth hockey age, participate with us. In fact, we got a nice donation from St. Cloud from a family foundation with roots in the Clearwater Annandale area. And she said, we really view this as a way to get Annandale kids to participate who currently think Monticello is too far to drive. So truly a regional impact. And I don't need to tell the people in this room about the economic impact, but certainly the construction as it's been ongoing has impacted our community. We are finding this to be a way to energize regional collaboration. This will be a multi-year use facility. When I mentioned rural development, an example of what can happen, and I'm not saying this is actually A led to B, but it was just recently announced that there's plans to construct a new hotel in Cokato, and certainly arenas and the associated activity can lead to those kinds of developments and with the associated tournaments and so forth. And our school is absolutely chomping at the bit to start using the facility as a quasi field house with a winter like we're having this year and a spring like we had last year. The baseball and golf programs definitely looking forward to using those facilities. In fact, we just recently received a donation to include golf tee boxes and nets to use in that facility upon its completion or to use in the off season. The economic sustainability, we feel this is about as lean and mean as you can get to build an arena and to operate an arena, and our goal has been to keep hockey as affordable as possible. Our operational budget, we think, is very realistic based on other facilities that we've seen, successful facilities, I would point out. We also, as part of our capital campaign, have created some operational fundraising that's currently going into construction. Charity auctions, golf tournaments, and raffles, and we're now earning about $40,000 a year, which is going into capital campaign, but will eventually be converted to operational funding to help subsidize our hockey program and keep the costs low. That's a quick summary. I appreciate the opportunity, Madam Chair and Committee, to tell you a little bit about what we're doing, and would welcome any questions.
And is Mr. Moe speaking as well, or you're there for questions?
He's available.
Representative Davids has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifier. On page 2 of your handout, it has a picture of where we're at, so that's the road is going east to west, if you will. Are you going to pick up more parking on the east side or the west side of the facility?
This one here.
Yes.
This, Madam Chair, Representative Davids.
Right.
We're in close discussions with the activities director at DC Schools. The parking lot you see on the east side of the school there, if you could see further east, that's where the football field is. But we see our parking area, which would be on the left side of the arena that you see there. The plan is to share the two parking lots. When there aren't hockey activities, overflow parking from the Performing Arts Center could go into ours and vice versa. And the plan, working closely with AD Perry Tennyson, is to carefully coordinate our schedules so we don't have events on the same evenings.
Okay. And then this is for Representative Erdahl, Madam Chair. I think it's the Litchfield Dragons and the Das Colcato, if I remember right, Chargers, was it?
Yes.
What is the Litchfield Das Colcato hockey team's name?
Representative Erdahl.
The Dragons.
Ooh. Thank you, Madam Chair. How'd you pull that off?
I had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's what they all say. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you for making the trip all the way in today from the other side of town. We appreciate that. And also want to compliment you on your fundraising efforts and local efforts. It looks like you've gone through quite a bit of extensive local fundraising and generating local share. So looks like you've got an excellent start on that. Also, on what appears to be a very Spartan building and project to try to get the most dollars that you can delivered as quickly as possible. The prospect of going to natural ice indoors, I think if you poured it this year, you'd be great. Maybe for long into the summer, who knows. But obviously, we can't rely on that every year, so I appreciate that. One of the things that I'm going to be doing, and I thought about actually a couple weeks ago when I was at a hockey game in the suburbs watching high school hockey, was the transformation of how our rinks are changing over time with the pressures from female athletes being one thing, but also there's just different pressures on how these facilities look. When I was a little kid, we played at a lot of county arenas that were always very, very cold. And they seemed to be developed like between the mid-60s and 1980. There was a lot of concrete buildings with bar joist roofs that were county-owned. And over time, that's changed a little bit. And I don't know who funded that great big influx of rinks in that time period. And then in the 80s and 90s, we've had another big infusion of money. But those are really changing, and the amenities and the experiences that kids have in these rinks have changed, as does the pressure to maintain these rinks, as we've heard. The Plymouth Arena with refrigerants, with amenities that are really at a very, very different level than Biff Adams and Polar Arena that I remember freezing at when I was a little kid. So if somebody, maybe Mr. Erickson or anyone else, can cut down on my Googling time between now and the floor, that'd be great to just talk a little bit about what the policy shift has been between funding local and regional arenas for K-12. That would be great. So thank you again for making the trip, and thanks for your volunteer efforts on a good project.
I think that question was maybe directed at, is that for later, or?
You can, it was just more for an email in between. That's just what I'm thinking about and what I'm working on, but if you get me something, I'll get it out to our members too. Thanks.
Thank you. Who owns the facility?
Madam Chair, the facility is owned by the Dascocato Regional Ice and Sports Center. It's a 501c3, and we're a Minnesota 501c3. So the arena is owned by our group.
So you're a nonprofit. The building is on school district property, and I believe it would have to be owned by the school district if we were going to be able to bond for that. Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, state bond funds can only be used for publicly owned projects, so nonprofits are not eligible for bond funding.
And the way some people have handled that is it gets turned over to either the city or the school district. The problem is they then become the responsible party for ongoing operating of the program.
Yes. Madam Chair and committee members, We have a 99-year operating lease and land use agreement with the school. We have discussed with the school situations where we were looking at the opportunity to acquire some equipment that would have been a donation from a different state institution. In that situation, the school said they could agree to be the owner and lease it back to us, so there may be some opportunities. I don't want to speak for the school board and Superintendent Powers, but they've been very, very supportive of us and basically said that they'll do what it takes to get the project finalized.
In our bill last year, one of the reasons we put cash in rather than geo-bonding is we assume there are probably on a number of these things some issues that, you know, geo-bonding has such very specific rules. So it's just something for us to keep in mind. I think we did we get everybody's question? So I thank you very much for sharing the story. Representative Ward, are you? Have you looked at the February 27 and March 4 minutes?
I have, Madam Chair. I'll move approval.
Any additions or corrections? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those sets of minutes are approved. You will see on our agenda our next several meetings and the issues before us, some department background, and also taking a look at a couple of bills. I think, have we concluded everything? Meeting is adjourned.